All right, let's move on with some of these other questions. I managed to get another load of laundry done, so we can move on with this stuff. Another person has written in saying, "Hi, Daryl. I just watched your interview on Conscious TV, which was very illuminating. I completely get that there is just this happening, doing what it does, and the only thing that we can do is be what we are. And you come back to this message several times during the interview, seemingly because it's the long and the short of it. So my question is, and from a story perspective, it sounds loaded, but it really is completely genuine. What can take up the time in a 1 to 2 day seminar or an even longer residential workshop? How often can you say that one thing? And if we are being lived and have no free will, and have never made a decision, and we will either have the experience we call awakening or we won't, why would we or should we attend yours or anyone else's events? Is it because being in the presence of one who has your perspective can somehow endow someone else with it? Not that there is you or anyone else. I genuinely am puzzled, so I hope you can help. Thank you." Yeah, so very bluntly, yes, there is only just this happening, doing what it does, this great mysterious event of what we would call now. It's just happening, it's just doing what it does. And the only thing that anyone can ever do in that is simply be what you are in this moment. Be what nature is expressing in this moment. Be what this great mysterious dance is expressing in this moment. However, within that great mysterious event of existence, there are apparent forms and there are apparent people that are drawn to this, they seem to apparently be drawn to this apparent non-dual perspective. And in that apparent journey, even though all of that is a totally mysterious event that has no particular form and we can't legitimately really say what that is, within the apparent forms and within the apparent journey, people who are drawn to this often have a lot of questions. And for each person, it's unique. They may be drawn to a 2 day seminar in order to consider all of this in more detail. They may be drawn to an even longer residential workshop in order to kind of sort out some of the questions that they have or express some of the questions that they have and to consider this in more detail. For many, they just enjoy stepping away from their usual work day and the usual focuses of a very busy life in order to spend time in the countryside and relax a bit. Even if you're on a residential workshop, or retreat situation, it's not that every waking moment is going to be spent considering non-duality. And in the periods of time where we are considering a non-dual perspective, it's really just a matter of considering any number of possible aspects of existence. Everybody comes to it in a slightly different way. Everybody seems to have a slightly different question, and they're wondering how it is that these relative viewpoints actually fit in with this greater overall mysterious dance of existence. So, actually, the apparent time is filled up quite easily with a lot of these considerations. It's also a time to simply rest with the mysterious dance that existence is. In our usual workaday world, there are a lot of demands on our time. And so, some people find it a wonderful opportunity to go on a workshop or a retreat and to simply have time to rest as the happening of the moment without having to focus on particular ideas or even particular ideas of non-duality. Like, ultimately, this isn't something called non-duality. It's just a totally mysterious event expressing itself. And to rest as that event in a very obvious way, for some, it's a very nice thing to do, or it's a nice thing to participate in. a nice way to be expressed. This person has also asked that if we are being lived and we have no free will and have never made a decision and we will either have the experience we call awakening or we won't, why would we go to why would we go to your event or anyone else's event? And there isn't any why. The whole thing is simply the compulsive dance of existence. And even if you have this apparent awakening, it's going to occur in an apparently unique fashion. So it may occur on a retreat situation. But fundamentally, there's no why, as far as why would you attend the retreat on non-duality. It's either you're expressed in that way or you're not. And there's no particular advantage one way or the other for everyone in general. There's just simply the way you're expressed. It's not the right expression that you go on these retreats, and it's not the right expression that you don't go on these retreats. There's just whatever you're compelled to do. This person is asking also, why should anyone go on my retreat or my workshop or anyone else's workshop? And there isn't any should or shouldn't. There's just what happens. I don't even say everyone should have a non-dual sensibility. I'm just saying it's one of the mysterious expressions of life. I'm not saying, oh, you should go out and develop a non-dual sensibility or try to have a non-dual sensibility. And I'm not saying a non-dual sensibility is the one true understanding of existence. I simply point out that all of that, an apparent non-dual sensibility is simply one of the mysterious expressions of existence. There aren't any shoulds or shouldn'ts to existence. There's just what happens. And this person goes on to say, does being in the presence of one who has my perspective, does that somehow endow someone else with that perspective? And no, the possibility of this perspective arising has nothing to do with anyone causing that. It is simply one of the mysterious expressions of existence. But it's still the case that even though all of this is an unexplainable dance, that within the apparent world of form, this apparent realization will sometimes arise in a workshop on non-duality or a retreat that's considering non-duality. It's also the case that it will arise in situations where you're not on retreat and you're not even considering something called non-duality. It just happens in whatever way it happens. Again, ultimately, the concern here is not, like in what's being expressed in a non-dual sensibility, it's not saying there's a right way or a wrong way for you to be living life. It's not saying there's a right understanding of existence to have or a wrong understanding of existence to have. It's just saying that existence is going to play out in whatever way it plays out. So there's no right thing for you to be doing. There's simply the way you're expressed, the needs, the interests, the concerns, the abilities, and the lack of abilities that you apparently are, and all of that is the expression of this larger dance. Each and every one of these expressions is a legitimate expression of this totally mysterious dance. So however you're expressed is fine. Nobody can offer some blanket statement of what is healthy for everyone, for absolutely everyone. Nature is healthiest in diversity. Everyone has a slightly different sensibility of existence. So these notions of blanket statements, I mean, there are things that many people find helpful. We can explore that those things if we're drawn to them, but whether or not they'll actually be helpful to us in any overall fashion, no one can say ahead of time. What's helpful to one may actually, at some point, be a hindrance to another in some odd way. All right, another person has written in saying, "Hi, Daryl. I live in North Battleford, Saskatchewan. I heard your interview with Jerry Cates. I was immediately struck by the straightforwardness of your message. The expression bare bones kept coming to my mind. First question, why do you think that so few non-duality teachers have come to the bare bones position that you have? Second question, what do you make of all the woo-woo claims?" And basically by that he means all the wild claims that almost every other non-duality teacher is making. For example, mind-body healings, getting in touch with astral spiritual guides, Ramana Maharshi showing up in their bedroom. Third question, if there was a free non-duality conference being held right across the street from where you work, would you attend? Fourth question, I've worked in retail for 30 years and still some customers annoy the hell out of me. Do you have any advice based on your experience? Lastly, I ran across a Carl Jung quote the other day and was wondering what you might think about it. As far as we can discern, the sole purpose of human existence is to kindle a light in the darkness of mere being. Thanks for your time and consideration. P.S. Please keep doing these talks as long as you can. They are all I have now that you've spoiled me and turned me off almost all other teachers. Okay, let's just go through these one at a time. He has the feeling that my expression is a very bare bones expression. And the first question is, why do I think that so few non-duality teachers have come to the bare bones position that I have? And I have no idea. I don't even know what I am. You know, people will say that I'm a non-duality teacher or someone who expresses a non-duality sensibility, a non-dual sensibility. And I do so in a very simple and direct fashion. But for me, that's not the truth. I have no idea what's going on here. This is a totally mysterious event. For me, it's not non-dual teachers and non-dual students, and it's not a guy going to work in a warehouse. It's a totally mysterious event. All of those stories, you know, the stories arise describing this event in this way, but even that's a totally mysterious event. So none of it, you know, there isn't any portion of it that is more accomplished than any other portion of it. It's all just happening the way it's happening. So I don't even consider notions about why certain non-duality teachers come to a bare bones position and others don't. It's all of it is just a natural expression of existence. The second question, what do I make of all the wild claims that almost every other non-duality teacher is making? For example, mind-body healings, getting in touch with astral spiritual guides, Ramana Maharshi showing up in their bedroom. People say all kinds of things, and absolutely none of those descriptions are reality. I say all kinds of things, but absolutely none of those things are reality either. All of this, as far as I can make out, you know, in my sensibility, all of it is, again, just a totally mysterious event. So, you know, one person may claim that their bodily aches and pains are somehow cleared up by a non-dual sensibility, and maybe that seems to have occurred in certain situations. It won't be occurring in all situations. There are people who are apparently getting in touch with astral spiritual guides, and that's how they perceive existence. But that's not how everyone is going to perceive existence. That's just one of the mysterious expressions of existence. Somebody else might have a vision of Ramana Maharshi showing up in their bedroom, and who knows what that's about? I don't even know what's going on when I'm washing my dishes. It seems like I'm washing the dishes, but actually, if I consider that in any great detail, it's a totally mysterious event, compulsively expressing itself in that way. So I can't even get to considering more esoteric experiences, such as Ramana Maharshi showing up in my bedroom. It's like all of it is totally baffling to me. So I'm not even going to try to explain existence as me washing my dishes, let alone try to explain it as Ramana Maharshi showing up in my bedroom or connecting with an astral spirit guide or ideas of body healings coming with a non-dual perspective. All of those descriptions are ultimately fantasy. Third question, if there was a free non-duality conference being held right across the street from where you work, would you attend? No, probably not. I can't say for sure what would actually happen if there was a free non-duality conference being held right across the street from where I work. But the chances are that I probably wouldn't attend. I mean, I'm just not drawn to that. I have no idea why I'm not drawn to that. I'm just not drawn to that. Fourth question. I've worked in retail for 30 years and still some customers annoy the hell out of me. Do you have any advice based on your own experience? Yes. My sense of life is that everybody is expressed in a very different way, or in a different way. Some are expressed in a somewhat similar fashion to my expression, and I often will find their company pleasant and supportive, and then there are others that are expressed in a radically different way to me, and I find many of those expressions to be as obnoxious as hell. They annoy the hell out of me too. And that's not to say they're not a legitimate expression of existence. They are a totally perfect expression of the dance of the universe. It's just not my expression, nor do I feel comfortable in their company. So, do I have any advice based on my own experience? I don't have any advice, but I have an observation. Some people annoy the hell out of me, and there's absolutely nothing I can do about that. I don't particularly want to spend time in their company. End of story. And the last question this person has presented, he says, I ran across a Carl Jung quote the other day and was wondering what you might think about it. And the quote is, as far as we can discern, the sole purpose of human existence is to kindle a light in the darkness of mere being. Well, that's a very poetic expression. It's a nice sounding statement, but I can't relate to it. For me, there isn't even a human existence. There's just a totally mysterious event, and I don't know what its purpose is. It just happens the way it happens. In the world of storylines and in the world of apparent human beings, I know a lot of people who just want to make a lot of cash. And they're not considering any notion of kindling a light in the darkness of mere being. That wouldn't make any sense to them. This event that we call nature or the universe is a totally unexplainable, mysterious dance. To try to I mean, even if we put it in poetic terms about kindling a light in the darkness of mere being, I mean, for me, it's kind of a choking, claustrophobic way of looking at existence. So, anyway, and that's just from my perspective. It doesn't have to be your perspective. There are lots of people who find these kinds of poetic expressions to be very meaningful, and that's just as legitimate as my expression. All of this is just for your consideration. All right, moving on. Another person has written in saying, "Dear Daryl, I just have an instinct to write to you after discovering and listening to your talks. My life has been a spiritual searching from the day I was born, the same year as you, and has been full of ups and downs, needless to say. I've been through the usual things, much and varied, but Buddhism played a major part throughout everything else. It would take me ages to name it all, so I'll just tell you where I am now. I'm lost. A few days ago, I came to the conclusion that I didn't know anything. After a lifetime of inner work, I knew nothing. So what is guiding me from one thing to another? I've always thought I felt a divine presence intuitively guiding me. Even when I realized I knew nothing the other day, I put on my computer and Joan Tollefson appeared on Facebook announcing your retreat here in the United Kingdom later in the year. I've read her books, which got me interested in non-duality in the first place. Was I guided to you? I've listened to some of your talks and am really interested in booking your retreat. This is all new to me, and I'm scared in a way, as I'm totally confused. Letting go of everything that's meant something to me is scary. When I've had insights or realizations in the past, it gave me a sense of freedom and joy, but now I feel dread. I've just been for a walk along the seafront near where I live, and usually this clears my head, and I return refreshed and free and happy. But today I cried all the way home. All my family and friends seem to just go along with life and accept it as it is, with opinions and judgments and complaining, needless to say. Has my life of searching been a complete waste of time? Anyway, I will continue to listen to your talks, which make complete sense to me, but leave me with much confusion also. With thanks and gratitude." As I mentioned before, life has storms. So usually the climates we live in are relatively benign, and storms occur once in a while. They can be little storms, maybe a passing rain shower, or they can be really incredibly difficult storms, hurricanes, tornadoes. And it's the same with life in general, that there are storms in life, emotional storms, confusions that arise, and for the most part they can be mild, but at times they can be extreme. And all of this is the natural expression of existence. Now, for this particular person who's written in, she has seen her life as a spiritual journey, one of coming to new insights and realizations. And it's always seemed like it's been leading to something bigger, some bigger realization. And now there's the feeling that she knows nothing, that after a lifetime of inner work, she knows nothing. She's always had the feeling that something has been guiding her to the next thing, always had the feeling that there was a divine presence intuitively guiding her. Now she's kind of puzzled, like, what has been moving her? So, rather than consider that this is some total disaster, let me ask this. What if it's the possibility that the big realization is about to happen, and that the big realization is ultimately that you do know nothing? that really you can't explain what's going on here, that it is ultimately a totally mysterious event simply expressing itself, and that it can't really be defined in terms of a particular person being led to a particular realization, a particular understanding, and that what actually happens is at a certain point, even though it seems as though it's being somebody on a spiritual journey, and it seems as though it's somebody being led to bigger and bigger realizations, what if it's actually the great mysterious event waking up to the fact that it's a great mysterious event, and it has never been a person on a journey, that it has never been a person having realizations, that all the way along it's a totally mysterious event, and that it hasn't been a person being guided by some divine presence, that it's simply the divine presence moving to its own nature. It's like a great river flowing. So that it never has been a person figuring out the right way to go. It's never been a person being guided by this greater mysterious event. It is only the great mysterious event moving to its own nature, flowing like a great river, moving and shifting like the dance of a great mysterious ocean. What if the ultimate spiritual realization is that there's no way to say what we are? That we are the dance of this great mysterious event. That there is only the dance of this great mysterious event. Does that mean that we're lost? Or does that mean that there might come the realization that there is only this wild, exotic, magical dance of ever-shifting events, ever-shifting appearances, and that it is nobody's personal doing? So it's like a wild adventure. And for each apparent person, even though that person isn't the reality, even though that, you know, to describe this happening as a person, that isn't the reality, but for each apparent person, the adventure is unique. And it will have both its ups and downs, its joys and sorrows, its clarities, its apparent confusions. But it's always this great mysterious dancing, presenting some new and curious appearance. What if that's the case? Because that's basically what a non-dual sensibility is offering. Has your life of searching been a complete waste of time? No, because it never was your life of searching. It's always been a totally mysterious eventing, a great magical unformed ocean moving and shifting and waving in the way it's been moving and shifting and waving. There's no waste of time in that. There hasn't really been any searching. It just seemed as though there was searching. And now perhaps there's going to be the simple acknowledgement of this wild, exotic, magical adventure. This wild, exotic, magical, ongoing presentation of passing appearances, moving and shifting and dancing, some days peaceful and calm, some days dark and stormy, some days joyful, some days sorrowful, all of it very rich in its expression. Deep and subtle depths of expression. Anyway, this is just for your consideration. In any event, whatever storm is presenting itself is going to pass. And who knows what's going to present itself next. Okay, another person has written in saying, "Hi, Daryl. I've been a regular listener to your sense of non-duality. On this road to nowhere, it's good to have companions that reassure us that we are not crazy. My personal movement in recent years has moved from mantra meditation, which I had practiced for many years, to Ramana's and Robert Adams' self-inquiry." And Ramana here is Ramana Maharshi. "Tony Parsons has been an inspiration in his burning of the Advaita ivory towers, and most recently UG Krishnamurti. UG seems to resonate most strongly these days. There comes a question regarding UG's presentation about awakening. When he says that when it happens, there is an actual physical death of the body, where all cells are then transformed to a normal way of working, what is your sense regarding this transformation? It seems there is a part of me that knows it really doesn't matter to know any of this, but my curiosity keeps appearing on how you would speak about this. Once again, thank you for creating this forum. I enjoy listening to your voice. It resonates with something inside that helps reconfirm who I am. Thanks." All right, so this person is mentioning that he's now strongly drawn to the self-inquiry process that Ramana Maharshi and Robert Adams had spoken about. So this is just simply asking the question, who am I? And the answer to that is not a concept. Many times you will ask the question and all kinds of thoughts will come up. But if you realize the limitation of thoughts, you realize that they can't really describe what's actually happening in the moment. So at some point, when you ask, who am I, you're just left with the event of the moment and no attempt to describe it. And thoughts will come and go, but they will be seen to be a portion of the dance of the moment. So you're not left with a concept, you're left with this great mysterious event, dancing. And that's what we are. Now, he goes on to ask or point out that when UG Krishnamurti talked about awakening, at one point he said that when it happens, there's an actual physical death of the body, and all the cells of the body are then transformed to a normal way of working. What is my, and he asks, what's my sense of this transformation that UG is talking about? So first and foremost, let's remember that UG is also somebody who said human beings can get all of their nutrition from tomatoes and that all you ever have to eat is tomatoes and you will be totally healthy. Obviously, UG Krishnamurti is capable or was capable of some very dramatic statements. And maybe UG Krishnamurti could get all of his nutrition from tomatoes. I just know that I can't. And so I'm not even drawn to trying to live totally on tomatoes. UG Krishnamurti also would talk about how the glands in his body would swell on full moon nights, and that scientists had confirmed that his body would have this kind of response to the movement of the moon. Again, a very direct, or a very blunt statement, a very wild statement. That may happen for some people, that somehow changes in their body occur somehow in relation to the movement of the moon. All of the women in the world know something about that, that the process of their body is somehow linked to the larger flowing of the universe. So in somebody like UG, maybe his glands did do some strange things on full moon nights. And there are certain energies that will flow in me in accordance with the movement of the moon, but I don't think that's the moon influencing me. I think there are just rhythms in nature that express themselves in a similar fashion. So, you know, what is my sense of him saying that with awakening, with spiritual awakening, there is a physical death of the body and all the cells are then transformed to a normal way of working? Well, my sense of that would be that from this personal view of existence, where you're thinking that you're something separate from the rest of existence and that you need to be in control of it, something that accompanies that perspective is a physical tension, a sense of needing to effort in a certain way, needing to consciously create an effort. And there's a physical tension that inhabits the body, so that you have, on certain days, you have an upset stomach, you have hunched shoulders, you have gritted teeth, you have a pain in the back of your head, and a pain in your forehead. And all of that accompanies this notion that we're somebody separate from existence, somebody that needs to be in control. And so there's this, apparently, a desperate urge to control life, and that's accompanied by this ongoing feeling of tension and stress. So, with the realization that we don't exist as anything apart from the dance of the universe or the movement of nature or the great mysterious ocean of existence, there's a relaxing. There's the realization that we're going to be presented in whatever way we're presented. We're going to be presented with certain apparent abilities and certain apparent circumstances. We're going to be presented with a certain apparent response to those circumstances, and all of that, I mean, we could say it's all on automatic. So that in certain situations, there may be a certain efforting that seems to arise, but it's not something we consciously have to be concerned about. It's not something that we consciously have to worry about or create, because it will just happen as a movement of existence. Now, in that realization, there is a relaxation. So the body, as it has been presenting itself, as it seems to have presented itself for a certain period of time, relaxes. And there's a relaxation within all the cells of the body. And there's no longer this sense of urgency or tightness. There's just a more relaxed relationship to existence. The more relaxed flowing of the unformed ocean of existence. So, in a way, there's this physical shifting of what we would call the body. It's not really the body, it's just, again, another one of the mysterious expressions of existence. So, but the body, as we might have known it, or thought it was, that dies, and it then expresses itself in a different way, as more of a sense of relaxation. Now, there may be some people, some apparent people, who have this non-dual realization, and they won't have any sense of the body relaxing in any big way. Somebody else may have this realization, and there will be some strong sense that the body has relaxed in a big way. And for some, it may really seem like a really radical shift in how the body has been expressing itself. Again, there isn't any blanket statement that covers everybody's situation. So, you know, for somebody who says that you can get all your nutrition from tomatoes, and for somebody who says that the moon causes all the glands in his body to swell, creating huge lumps on his body, you know, maybe it is the experience that a radical shift in how the body expresses itself. In any event, it's not my expression. I experience some of these things to a small degree. I experience that maybe I get some of my nutrition from tomatoes, but I don't have the feeling I get all of my nutrition from tomatoes. And I have some sense of movements that I would call, you know, the process that I would call me. There's a certain shifting that seems to have a correlation with the movement of the moon, but these are just waves in all of existence, and some of the waves seem to correlate in a certain way. And yeah, I may have experienced a deep relaxation within the body, the release of a great deal of tension with this non-dual awakening, this apparent non-dual awakening. But did I experience it as a radical physical death? No, it's just it was just an apparent shift. So one of the things to be careful of in all of this is that if you're reading somebody else's description of their apparent awakening, please keep in mind that that is an absolutely unique awakening. That is absolutely a unique expression of existence. Within the world of apparent forms, each and every apparent form is a unique expression, and even if it seems very similar to your own, it can never be exactly the same as your own. So if you're trying to figure out if you've had a legitimate awakening by reading somebody else's description of it, there will always be some discrepancy. All right, another person has written in saying, "Hi, Daryl. I am one of those for whom realization came only after listening to your talks and reading your books. At the end of many, many years of seeking and serious practice. And I thank you from the heart. I asked a question once before, quite some time ago, about the Buddhist teachings of training the mind in the Theravada tradition. And this question I'm presenting now is, I suppose, related. It is certainly my experience that I am not creating my thoughts, urges, interests, etc., and that these simply arise on their own as part of the happening and conditions of the moment, and that some of these thoughts lead to certain bodily and verbal actions which seem to have results immediately and sometimes later on. It is also my experience that I have never been in control of what information or teachings I have happened to be exposed to or have searched for, the teachings I've followed up or have been interested in. However, almost as a separate issue, would you agree that certain actions repeated over time, such as breath meditation and seeing the wisdom of benevolent attitudes, will lead to a more pleasant and happy life, and certainly in the case of breath meditation, will lead to blissful bodily sensations, insight into the workings of the mind, and profound peace in many cases? Therefore, given the conditions arising for those practices to be possible, would you not see the point of the Buddha teaching and recommending them? Perhaps liberation, non-dual realization, when one realizes there is nobody in there controlling one's life, and that there is such thoroughgoing change that nothing formed exists in the first place, is a completely separate thing from, say, what the Buddha taught when he recommended meditation and training the mind for a happier and more beneficial life in the relative world. Please can you comment, and perhaps my question reveals that I may be mistaken in thinking realization has occurred in my case. Thanks again, Daryl." First of all, no, this comment and this question doesn't indicate that you haven't had a realization. It's quite possible. I mean, Joan Tollefson and I talk about the finer points of exactly this kind of thing. And we've been doing that from the time we first got to know each other. Just because it's of interest to both of us. So, you know, there is this offering of a non-dual perspective, and the non-dual perspective ultimately is saying there is just a totally unexplainable formless dance moving in whatever way it moves, that there's no way of really saying anything about that. And then along with that, there is this apparent world of form. So along with the deep, deep sense that whatever forms we see aren't really the fact of life, that all those forms are changing, it is the fact that we still see form. And within that world of form, there are individuals, apparent individuals, that are drawn to a life of meditation, a life of observation, a life of exploring things like concentration, meditation on the breath, considering benevolent attitudes, or the Buddha called them blissful abidings, where we adopt a certain attitude of sympathetic joy for people, you know, relating to other people's situation and appreciating those people's situation and their expression in life, attitudes of objectivity, detachment, a neutrality, just a peaceful consideration, neutral consideration of existence, of the happening of the moment. And in that exploration, those apparent people discover that there are very pleasant situations and apparently pleasant results that come from that kind of exploration. And so it is, apparent teachers like the Buddha offered these explorations, breath meditation, body meditation, divine abidings, the consideration of sympathetic joy, loving kindness, detachment, and enjoying things like cultivating feelings of loving kindness. However, for the Buddha, he also pointed out that these, even though they're pleasant and you may be drawn to explore these kinds of things, that they don't ultimately lead to any kind of liberation. That they're not going to leave you with the contentment of realization. All of these things, like concentration practice and insights and the blissful feelings of loving kindness practices, these are all passing experiences. They don't offer any kind of ultimate contentment with life. However, he said, you know, I've taken everything else away from you. You know, you can't handle money, you can't have sex, you can't go to the beauty parlor, you can't buy new clothes, you can't go to movies, you can't read books, you can't indulge in stuffing your face full of food when you're feeling worried or concerned about life. So because I've taken all of these things away from you, I'm going to let you indulge in things like these pleasant experiences of loving kindness and deep concentration and all of that. However, he also went on to point out that ultimately your real freedom is going to come from acknowledging life as it actually is, acknowledging the fact that it has no form. Now, it's quite fine to be drawn to meditation. I mean, through most of my life, I was drawn to things like meditation and the exploration of altered states and trying to discover what it was that was possible there and what wasn't possible. And I also discovered that they were limited in what they offered, but that was my joy at a certain period in life, in my apparent journey. And it's also the natural way that other apparent people are expressed. However, it is not the way that everyone is expressed. So I'm not interested in telling the rest of the world to explore those kinds of things. And since most of the other spiritual teachers in the world are pointing to those kinds of explorations and not putting a lot of emphasis on the bottom line, I don't feel I really have to add anything more to those relative teachings. So since pretty much every Buddhist teaching in the world is teaching breath meditation and body meditation and the development of things like loving kindness, why would I have to add anything to that? That's not going to lead to ultimate freedom. If you're wanting to participate in that, if that's the way you're expressed, that's wonderful. But the bottom line is something else. And that simple acknowledgement of life that also arises in people who are not interested in things like meditation or spiritual practice. It can arise in the situation of someone feeling that they're compelled to behave in life in a way that they don't like, but they realize that they can't stop it because it's not their doing. It is a compulsion. And they may realize in that simple acknowledgement that everything they are is the compulsive dance of existence. And that will have nothing to do with meditation practice or loving kindness practices. It's also the case that there are those who are expressed with a personality where sitting quietly and observing the breath, or sitting quietly and observing in some detailed way the movement of the mind, is really the most irritating thing they can possibly consider doing. And so there's no way they're going to get themselves to do that. Maybe they want to go long distance running instead, or maybe they want to go to the gym and work out with weights. And in that situation, various aspects of their life present themselves, and they are able to acknowledge certain realizations and able to acknowledge certain subtleties of their particular process. But it has nothing to do with sitting meditation or breath meditation. Or it's a wonderful thing if you're given the urge to explore in a meditative way, but it's also a wonderful thing if you're expressed in some other way. Neither one ultimately leads to what we would call liberation or realization. What we would call realization may arise in someone who is a meditator, it may arise in someone who is a business person, it may arise in someone who is a scientist. In the situation of Einstein, it simply arose when he read Schopenhauer's line stating that you can do what you want to do, you just can't create your wants. So in that moment, Einstein realized that, I should point out, that's a very loose translation. It's still quite accurate. It's just not as formal as the usual translations of that Schopenhauer line. But in that moment, Einstein realized that the primary motivation of all of his behavior was not his doing. So ultimately, his expression in life was not his doing. Now, often there will be teachers who speak of liberation and realization, and they offer considerations in that realm along with meditation practices. And it can sometimes get very confusing with the idea that the meditation practices will ultimately lead to realization. And that's not the fact. It seems to occur in certain situations in that way. But there, over the centuries, there have been hundreds and hundreds of thousands of individuals doing spiritual practice, and they haven't had any big spiritual realization. And there are others who have done no spiritual practice at all, and they somehow awakes at a certain point with the sense that all of life is this great mysterious presence, unformed, unexplainable, simply moving and shifting in whatever way it moves and shifts. I can see that if someone has a great interest in things like meditation and seems to have certain abilities and understandings in relation to meditation, that they might want to offer that to those people who are drawn to it. And that's wonderful for those people who are drawn to it. The concern that I would naturally have around that is that it's sometimes presented as something that everyone should be doing. And that's not true. These blanket statements about what's best for everyone these are simply another judgment placed on humankind, and they ultimately lead to some portion of humankind feeling bad about themselves because they don't match the recommendation. They don't match this weird abstract standard that's being set for everyone. So, from my perspective, enjoy whatever capacities and interests life presents as you. But if you're interested, please be a bit cautious in recommending that for absolutely everyone. If someone's drawn to it and you can offer something, great. If they're not drawn to it and they move in a totally different direction, that's also great. That's also a legitimate expression of existence. Okay, another person has written in saying, "Hi, Daryl. I have read all of your books now and listened to most of the questions answered on your website. I now consider you to be, at least as far as I'm concerned, the last word on all of this stuff. For the last 7 years, I've been doing a good amount of reading, as well as attending places like the Dharma Bomb Temple in San Diego. I have a question. I have read Ramana Maharshi, Nisargadatta Maharaj, Ramesh Balsekar, and Robert Adams. I mentioned these four specifically because I think I hear you say that your non-dual message echoes these four sages. My question is about the self with a capital S that they talk about a lot. Not the separate individual self, but the undivided universal self. And they go into the importance of self-inquiry. However, I have not seen or heard you mention this self. If you have, I missed it. Thanks again for everything you are doing." My expression echoes in many ways the expressions of Ramana Maharshi, Nisargadatta Maharaj, Ramesh Balsekar, and Robert Adams. I'm not identical to their expression. There will be differences that people can find, and many differences that people can find, but as far as the bottom line is concerned, my sense is that I'm echoing much of what they said. Now, their use of the word self with a capital S is just a word to point to the totally unexplainable happening of this moment. And they talk about self-inquiry. So, self-inquiry is this process of asking very directly, who am I? Now, in this non-dual consideration, we can ask, who am I? And initially, when we ask this question, we'll probably get a description. Oh, I'm Daryl Bailey, and I have these interests, and I'm 5'11½", and I weigh 175 pounds, and you know, there is this conceptual notion of what I am. But within the non-dual consideration, we begin to consider the legitimacy of those descriptions, and maybe in considering it to some degree, we discover that, no, I'm, you know, those words just point to the event that I am. And if I really acknowledge the event that I am, I find this moving, shifting, dancing event that's never the same from moment to moment. So apparently I was 3 months old at one point, and I was a certain size and had certain interests. And then apparently I was 10 years old at a certain point, and I was a certain size and had certain interests. And then I was 24 and was a certain size and had certain interests. And now I'm approaching 62. And I'm beginning to shrink a bit. And a lot of my interests are falling away. None of which is my doing. I didn't ask to be 3 months old. I didn't ask to be 10 years old. I didn't ask to be 24 years old. I didn't ask to be 62 years old. It's just a moving, shifting, dancing event that gets described in different ways. So, you know, if I ask the question, who am I? There isn't any concept that arises. There's just the event of this moment, just the moving, shifting, dancing, happening of now. And I don't even call it that. This is just pointing to the happening. So if I ask the question, who am I? There isn't any thought that arises. There's just, not in direct response to that question, there's just this happening. And there, at a certain point, there are apparent thoughts that come and go, but they're not even my doing. I don't even know what those are. They just come and go as a portion of this event. And for these other teachers that have been mentioned, the word self with a capital S, it's just another word for pointing to this happening. So, no, I don't use that word self because I find that for most people it's confusing. What are you? You're this mysterious happening of this moment. It has no form. It has no explanation. There isn't anybody doing it. It doesn't arrive anywhere in particular. There's just this flowing, this dancing, this dynamic, this functioning, this liveliness. That's all there is, and it's flowing to its own nature, like the flowing of a river, or the moving of an ocean, or a cloud drifting in the sky. It's just this, doing whatever it does. Nothing else is coming up in response to this, so let's move on to the last question. Okay, another person has written in saying, "Hi Daryl, I was rereading Dismantling the Fantasy for the umpteenth time just prior to going to bed, but sleep wasn't happening and I had to get up and write this. There seems to be a very strong resonance with and an almost constant movement here to, as you say, fully acknowledge the moment. It is obvious that there aren't any static forms and that all of existence is moving and shifting or coming and going. Everything is altering in some way or in a constant state of flux or movement, including all of the bodily functions, the mental activities, and so on. But what keeps coming up here is that there is something that doesn't appear to change. It appears that whatever this is that is acknowledging or noticing this flow has never really changed. Rather than using the usual spiritual labels and jargon of awareness or consciousness, and for lack of a better description that fits, it is what I refer to as I. Over this apparent life, it is also obvious that my perception and beliefs have undergone radical changes. There are no perpetrators or victims, no good events or bad events, and there is a knowing that nobody is actually doing his or her life, including me. Sometimes great joy arises, sometimes great sorrow arises, but I no longer believe that any of it is personal. I notice the body deteriorating and aging, but looking in the mirror, I don't recognize that face as being me. I don't seem to be or have been undergoing any change at all. Can you please speak to this? Warm regards." Okay. In observing life, and I don't really like this term, observing life, but for lack of any better term, let's use that term. In observing life, it will become quite obvious that everything in life is changing. However, in this attitude that I am observing life, there is an assumption being made. There's an assumption being made that there is something observing life. Now, it's a very difficult thing to directly investigate that. For some, there seems to be the capacity to acknowledge even that in a very subtle way and come to acknowledge that there really isn't an experience of something observing life. So rather than just say to people, we really need to examine that in a subtle way too, I usually like to use an experiment that Douglas Harding used to offer. So Douglas Harding was someone who used to offer all kinds of experiments to explore the moment, what's actually going on in the moment. And in doing so, he's pointing out certain obvious contradictions to our usual sense of existence. Now, in general, I didn't relate to a lot of those explorations and a lot of those little experiments, but there was one that I find incredibly powerful, and that involves a consideration of this situation where it seems like there's something that we are that is sitting observing existence, some mysterious invisible self that we would call me, and that, yes, we're not the moving, shifting, changing body, we're not the moods, we're not the thoughts, we're not the mental activities, we're not the varying states of consciousness, but we are somehow this unchanging observer, this invisible, some people call it awareness, or some people call it consciousness, some people call it an invisible observer, the true self. There is this feeling that there's something in there looking out, listening, feeling. And Douglas Harding had a very direct way of exploring that. So I've mentioned this before. It involves a paper bag, taking a paper bag that is about a foot long, a foot deep, and you cut the bottom out of the paper bag, and you get a paper bag that's big enough so that the opening of the bag fits over your face. And now, you know, if you don't have a paper bag, you can just create a cube of paper. You take some paper that's a foot wide and longer, and you join the long ends and create a tube that fits over your face so that you're looking down this tube and it's about a foot long, and then you look out the other end of the tube. And when you do that, look out at something in your room or wherever you are. Maybe you're sitting in the park and you want to look out at the trees, but most people are probably going to feel a bit uncomfortable about sitting in a public park with this tube pressed up to their face and looking out, or a paper bag, paper bag held up to their face in this way. So let's say you're sitting in your room, you look out, you look at the chair, or you look at a dresser or whatever. So you're looking out the paper bag, and then so there's that object that you're looking out at, that apparent object that you're looking out at. Then you bring your attention back to the end of the paper bag. Now you bring your attention up the sides of the paper bag, bring it back as far as you can to your face. Bring your attention back as far as you can. And at a certain point, you realize that you can only come so far, and you don't have an experience of something looking out. It becomes very obvious there is just the experience that we call seeing, but there isn't any experience of something actually doing the seeing. There is just the seeing. Now, I'm not saying this is going to become obvious for everyone who does this, but for some, it may become obvious that we don't have an experience of something inside this head looking out. And it may become obvious that it's the same with the hearing, the touching, the tasting, the smelling, and the thinking. There isn't any invisible self that's doing any of this. So in Buddhism, you have this statement that says, in the seeing, there's just the seeing. In the hearing, there's just the hearing. In the touching, there's just the touching. In the tasting, there's just the tasting. In the smelling, there's just the smelling. And in the thinking, there's just the thinking. There isn't anyone doing any of that. There's just that process. And in that realization, in realizing that there's no experience of an invisible self that's doing any of this, there may be a radical shift in the sense of self, so that the self, we may discover that instead of being something that's observing this event, we may discover that we are the event itself. There is just this event. And in some forms of Buddhism, they point out that you can't even call this event seeing, hearing, touching, tasting, smelling, and thinking, that those labels are very limited. And they're not true. They're not some absolute truth. So that the whole sense of yourself, if you ask, who am I? It comes to be just the happening of the moment. And there's no way of saying what that is. There's just the warming, cooling, sounding, silencing, lightening, darkening, vibrating, pulsing, dancing, happening of this moment. And those words don't describe it. They just point to this unexplainable happening. Liveliness, dynamic, a flowing, a shifting, a dancing. So, this is my sense of it in my exploration of existence, in my apparent exploration of existence. And from that exploration, there is the sense that this is simply the way I'm expressed. This is simply the sensibility that nature expresses as me. I don't know what you're going to find in this kind of exploration. There are those who will say that there is this invisible observer. And I'm not saying that they're wrong and I'm right. I'm simply saying that my expression is what it is. It can't be anything else. This is how nature expresses me. It's not that it's a right or wrong expression. It's just one of the expressions of existence. So when I offer this perspective, I'm not telling you to be a particular expression. I'm simply pointing out what I've observed, what I've apparently discovered in this apparent journey. I'm simply pointing out how life expresses me, and I'm pointing out that each one of us is a legitimate expression of existence. So again, what I'm offering here is just for your consideration. I'm not asking that you see things exactly the way I see it. I'm pointing to a certain exploration of existence. And I'm pointing to certain possible ways that we might appear to explore existence if we're interested in exploring it and what it is we might discover. Again, I don't know if any of this is helpful. But this is all that's coming up in response to this question. There is one other little item. Somebody wrote in and asked, when are your talks, when are your teachings, and when are you available to answer questions? So, I mean, right at the moment, here in Winnipeg, we have a gathering on the last Sunday of every month at Prana Yoga Studio here in Winnipeg. It lasts 2 hours between 1 o'clock and 3 o'clock. At that time, I will present this perspective. There will be an invitation to acknowledge the moment. And there will be a consideration of certain questions that people might have. There is this website. There are two major talks on this website expressing the basic overview of non-duality, the basic overview of spiritual awakening, and also an invitation to acknowledge the moment, just the happening of the moment. And there is this opportunity to write questions into the website, and I will respond at the end of each month in this verbal response. I will simply record whatever response that I have to these questions, and I will take this to work on a flash drive, and I will send it to England, and Marcus will post it on the website. And then there are these other situations where occasionally I will go to some other place like England or California And there are weekend seminars set up. There are talks that I will offer. There are, in this case, in August, there will be a retreat, a five-day retreat in the countryside. So that's really all that I can offer at this time. I'm not sure what specifically this person was looking for, but basically that's what I am able to offer at this time. All right, so that worked out nicely. This ended up being just a couple of minutes longer than the first segment of this response. That's all, folks. I hope that the coming month offers you lots of good things. As always, I know that it's going to offer you a mixed bag of things. That's life's dance. Anyway, till next time, take care. See ya.